Welcome to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Hey, you're just in time for another episode of the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. It's number 14 this week, and joining me is Eric Fox. How you doing today, Eric?
I'm doing fantastic, Zach. How are you doing, man?
Not bad, not bad. Unfortunately, we're missing out on Kellen and Lita's expert opinions this week, but we've still got lots to talk about in the world of sports. Starting off, we've got big news from the Ottawa Blackjacks. They've just signed Canadian Chris Joseph to the team. He's a 6'7" forward from Montreal. Got over a 10-year career so far, and 10's like the magic number with this guy, because no matter where he goes, he's averaging 10 points in almost every league or team he's on. And during the CEBL 2020 summer series, he averaged 10.5 points in four games with the Saskatchewan Rattlers. He's played in Spain. And I know, Eric, you got an awesome opportunity to go to Media Day and actually meet this guy and talk with him. So what was that like?
To be able to be in the arena at TD Place and have all the players as well as the coach and the GM come up one by one, do their little media briefings. I was able to get a ton of audio, which we will be using over the next few episodes here, but let's listen to what Chris Joseph had to say about this team heading in. Being one of the five guys with over 10 years experience under your belt.
Over 10, is it?
Over 10.
2012.
Being one of those, like the true veterans of the team, what kind of leadership experience are you hoping to bring to be able to help some of the young guys and build this team from the bottom, like you said?
Well, with you know, playing that many years comes, you know, I've had good experiences playing basketball and I've had some bad ones, and I'm able to use those experiences and kind of help mold those guys and kind of help them, you know, in the right direction. You know, if I see them struggling in a certain area, I could be there to pick it up and tell them, you know, where they could improve on, or even stuff off the court, you know, taking care of your body, the do's and don'ts. And I think that's going to be very important.
So moving from Spain to the CEBL, what do you think will be the biggest adjustment? But what kind of experience can you bring to the team playing in a league like that?
For me, you know, basketball is basketball. I remember when I first, when I got drafted in 2012, and then in 2013, my first experience in Europe was in France. And, you know, everybody was saying it's so much different. They could smack the ball off the rim and this, that, and the third. But to me, basketball is basketball. You got to put the ball in the basket. You got to get stops. So that doesn't change no matter where you're playing. And, you know, so from Spain to coming here, it's, you know, we have a lot of guys who play in Europe and things like that on this team, in this league. So I think, like, again, I said, basketball is basketball. We got to get stops to win. We got to put the ball in the basket. So we got to do that together as a group. I don't think it's anything that one individual can help. We got to get together through these 9 days of training camp and really, you know, find our niche. You know, whether it's going to be on the defensive end, whether it's spacing and shooting the ball on offense, we're going to have to find that within the 9 days of training camp and be able to show that in the first opening game of the season.
Wow, he seems like a real team player, and he seems like he's going to fall right into a groove with the team, telling people, you know, what they need to work on and just giving a helping hand here and there. I love how he's focused on the game too. I think he's going to be a really great player to watch this year.
Yeah, one of the things that really stuck out to me was just his response about, to him, basketball is basketball. It shouldn't matter which league you're playing in, which country you're playing in. Just play the game the way that you know how to play it. This guy is going to be a huge veteran presence on the court for the Blackjacks every game.
And he's consistent too, which I love. And I know the coach and GM is going to love it too, right?
Oh yeah, they definitely talk very highly about a lot of these veterans that they have signed. They have five guys on their roster with at least 10 years experience. So you know this roster is going to be very, very strong heading in.
Super, super excited for this league to get underway. It's starting next Thursday, a week from today, man. And leading up until then, they're going to be in training camp, training hard. And I know they're aiming for the top of the league this year. So how are they going to be going about doing that, Eric?
This year is unlike any other, even counting last year where they had the bubble in St. Catharines for their quick little summer series, to be basically 1 week away from opening night. But only have one day of training camp under your belt because they started training camp Wednesday and they play in training camp a couple times a day until next Wednesday. And then they're right back at home versus the Niagara River Lions on Thursday, June 24th at 7 p.m. So it's going to be huge to really, really push and really look at how the team is flowing. But they're going to have to do it in such a short amount of time. But on top of that, I also got a chance to talk to the head coach, Charles Dubé-Bray, as well as GM Javon Shepherd. So let's take a listen to what they had to say about the upcoming season.
It's just awesome to be on the hardwood again. Like it feels like forever, but it's what we love doing. And just seeing the guys here just gives you the feel that it's right around the corner. It actually is. But to have the feel for that team, you've been spending all those hours on Zoom calls and, you know, week after week, month after month, and signing this guy and evaluating all those players, and now you get it all together and we got a great bunch of guys, like high character people. You can feel that in the gym. I think the vibe's already really good, and can't wait to get to work tomorrow. Well, we're leaning on experience, obviously. Like, we got some older guys in here, and I think in a short-term type of league where it's going to be 10 weeks, it's going to be 68 days between day one and the championship weekend. So I think we got to be good from the get-go, or at least try to, and you get probably a better chance of doing that if you have players that have been around and that's not their first rodeo. They know how to make this team work. So we're trying to rely upon that a little bit more than maybe in a different type of context. But I do think we have a little bit of everything. Like, we have some younger guys that are hungry as well, and we'll see how training camp shapes out to see how they can battle out for minutes and rotation pieces and the fun stuff that will be starting tomorrow.
What would you say is one of the biggest things for the players to be able to play on a home court instead of one location like last year, but also be able to play road games and do road trips and build the chemistry that way?
I think it feels, I mean, without being full normalcy, it feels a little more like normal, you know, being at your place and not being in a bubble and, you know, having to do that same commute, like elevator, gym, back to the hotel, elevator to your room. Now you're kind of like living at home, and like Ottawa has reopened a little bit. Like, you're able to enjoy a meal if you want to enjoy one, or take a walk in the streets and, you know, be in different cities as well, which is what we experience as professional athletes and coaches. We're used to the traveling piece. And it's not always great to travel, but it's certainly fun to do it at least a little bit, to get to know one another and to be around one another. So I do think chemistry, you know, the bus rides and the plane trips, like they've all helped your chemistry down the road. It connects people together. So it definitely like helps to feel that. And you know, athletes are, and coaches as well, we're all creatures of habit. Like, we know what that routine is, and it just feels good to be back in that, and you know, to be back on the court and feel that we're going to play regular basketball again.
And if you were to have like a longer road trip at any point, like what kind of team building exercises would you try to plan? Like, I know some leagues, the coaches will be like, let's go to such and such a place and have a big team building exercise, like a game night or something like that. What kind of stuff would you be looking to do that way?
I mean, we're open to a lot of things, but like, obviously something the players like to do and that gets them together, and that's a little competitive because we all like to compete. So like, you know, bowling and stuff like that is always fun. And, you know, we've done it a lot in the past with different things. So I would anticipate that's something that we could do if we're allowed to. But that kind of stuff, generally something that involves a little competition, and that you can, you know, pair players together. So you start forming some alliances here and there, and just, you know, also something that just allows everyone to laugh and have fun as well, just not to always be immersed in that competitive world, like to be able that we can air it out and have fun.
The Blackjacks made a semifinal run in the bubble last year. What are your preliminary expectations from this group looking ahead?
I mean, we're starting a championship hunt tomorrow. I mean, I'm not saying we will deliver a championship, but we'll do everything in our power to get there. There's some stuff you control and some stuff you don't control in basketball. And I do think in a COVID year, there could be some unexpected things happening, which we hope will not happen to us. But we can't promise that right now. So I'm very cautious with that piece. But I would say we're hunting for number one spot. Like, it's not also a team that has 55 teams, a league that has 55 teams. It's a league with seven, so you know you have a shot at it. And Javon and Andy have done a tremendous job of putting great players on the court right here. Now it's our job to, you know, get there, get better every day, and see what happens. So, and like I said, it's hard to compare things because it's still a very small sample size. So you need to be efficient, and you need a little luck to go your way, certainly. So we'll hope that it's the case for us this year.
What would you say was the biggest thing in regards to trying to build this, like, this team with five guys that have over 10 years experience, but also multiple U Sports draftees or guys fresh out of college? What would you say was, like, the biggest thing for that?
I think you answered it yourself, the experience, right? And then you have those young guys. You want to be able to share that experience. And again, we're trying to build something where, you know, there's not a high turnover rate, but we're able to grow and build. So those younger guys that you see part of this team now, the next 2, 3, 4 years, they would have gotten the experience. They would have gotten the veteran leadership from the Earls, the, you know, the Junior Kugans, the Chris Josephs, and learned so much in that. There's going to be growing pains for them, but at the same time, I'm somebody that went through it as well. When you get, you know, 5 years into your career, you're now equipped and war ready for anything ahead of you. So I think that's really what went into it. And you said it best, is the experience and just being able to share that.
Wow, I've got all the faith in Charles DB. He's clearly done the research with his players, and he's got a lot of interesting guys to work with this season, with tons of experience. And with so much potential, I'm super excited to see these games get underway.
Yeah, I mean, Javon Shepherd, the GM, has built a team that you know can challenge for a championship. And Charles DB, the head coach, I mean, just to name a few, on his coaching staff, he has none other than the lead assistant coach, which is Patrick Ewing Jr. If you have a guy who has played in the NBA, but also has a Hall of Fame father that played in the NBA as well, that's going to be huge. And then their assistant coach, Fabian Peria Blizzard, another amazing, amazing coach. So I think this team is destined to do very well this year. So it will be interesting to watch over the next week with training camp and then the home opener next Thursday night.
Hopefully Javon gets some opportunities to do some team building stuff like bowling, like he mentioned, to not just build chemistry, but competition. And that's so important for a team. He's aiming for the top of the leaderboards. And I can respect that in a league with only seven other teams with the same mindset. Super, super excited. And Chris Joseph wasn't the newest signing in Ottawa. Atletico Ottawa over in the CPL got on loan from Atletico de Madrid, Spanish-Dominican attacking winger, Rafael Nunez. He's 19 years old. He's got a lot of potential, Eric. What are you looking forward to seeing in this guy?
I mean, I'm really excited to see what he has to offer. I mean, coming from the Atletico de Madrid Academy, where he recently played for the U19 team, this guy looks like he could be a very exciting player to watch. Young, fast, and it will definitely be interesting to see what he can offer on the pitch.
And he's a midfielder, so he's got lots of time to watch both sides of the field, gain lots of experience. And we also got our schedule announced for the Ottawa team this year. So Eric, what are some games that you feel people should circle on their calendars?
Yeah, so as we touched on briefly last week, the Canadian Premier League is doing their kickoff Winnipeg. So basically kind of like a bubble situation at IG Field in Winnipeg, home of Valor FC of the CPL and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers of the CFL. But there's 8 games per team being played there between the end of June and the end of July. And then they will reevaluate as to where they can play at home and with fans and so on and so forth. So this will be without fans. Atletico Ottawa kick off that tournament June 26th at 2 p.m. Eastern versus their rivals from back in the Fury days with FC Edmonton. I think if Atletico Ottawa can get a really good decision out of any of these games and get in a decent spot heading to the possibility of having a home opener at TD Place later this summer with fans hopefully in attendance, I think Atletico Ottawa has a really good shot at this league.
Well, between basketball and soccer, you know, two different sports, the link between them is both leagues are going to be very exciting, and both teams are going to be bringing the fire and passion I know Ottawa teams always do. But stick around, because we're going to be talking about some major sports leagues and the playoffs, namely the NHL and the NBA. So stick around for that. We're going to stick around for that. You're listening to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back inside the Press Box. I'm Eric Fox. I'm here with Zach Natto. And Zach, let's get into the playoffs. And I'm talking about the NBA playoffs. We're down to the conference semifinals. We've got eight teams left, one of which has actually already booked their ticket to the conference final. What have you got to say about the NBA playoffs so far, Zach?
Whew. Well, they've been exciting to say the least. The Phoenix Suns absolutely destroyed the Nuggets. I don't think anybody saw that coming. I know fans of Paul probably saw it coming, but I'm shocked. And Paul and Booker are such a great duo together. I mean, it works better than Raspberry and Lemonade, and that's saying a lot. So it sucks that Jamal Murray couldn't play in this series. Maybe it would have gone different, but it is what it is. It'll be cool to see the Suns go for a run. All my focus has been on the Bucks and the Nets. Ah, these games have been so exciting to watch, super close. Giannis couldn't make a free throw to save his life early on in the playoffs, but he is getting better. And Kevin Durant has been absolutely insane for this team. I love watching him play. He can literally do it all. And when it comes to the Clippers and the Jazz, you know, they're tied as of recording right now. And the Kawhi comeback was real, but now he's injured. It's going to be rough. I don't see the Clippers coming back, maybe. The Jazz have to step on the Clippers' throats in this one if they want to win. What do you think, Eric?
Like you said, step on the jugular and take that 3-2 series lead if Kawhi is definitely not playing. Utah needs to really make sure that they do not let the Clippers into this game, that they get them out of the way early and take that lead and get it sorted out. But I mean, going back to that Milwaukee versus Brooklyn series, man, you mentioned Kevin Durant, but he made some history on Tuesday night. Kevin Durant became the first player in NBA postseason history with 45 points, 15 rebounds, and 10 assists in a game. Like, that's insane. He was playing completely on fire the entire game, and he's the main reason why they are up 3-2 heading to Milwaukee for game six, which is tonight. So it's going to be a very, very exciting matchup. They can finish off the Bucks and move on to the conference finals, or the Bucks decide to show up again at home and pull this series back to Brooklyn for game seven. So it's going to be very interesting. When we go back to those Suns, man, those Suns, they defeat the defending champion LeBron James and the Lakers, and then they go in and sweep the Nuggets. Wow, I think they're on a run for destiny. They are destined. I have a feeling that they are destined to get to the NBA Finals and possibly challenge a Brooklyn or a Philadelphia or whoever comes out of the East for that championship. And it's going to be a tough matchup against the Suns this year. Now, let's move on to the bread and butter that you and I love to talk about, which is the NHL hockey and the Stanley Cup playoffs. So we're down to the final four. Vegas versus Montreal is the one matchup that I think everybody in Canada and a lot of people are really watching. Game one went 100% the way of Vegas. I think that one of the things that got brought up in this series heading into game one was the shock to the system of Montreal, because you look at that and you go, you've played a year and a bit without any fans, or even the last round with like 2,500 fans or whatever, but you're going into a building that's jammed to the rafters, loud, full fans? Like, what do you think that advantage was for Vegas heading into that series?
Well, it's a huge advantage. I mean, every time you make a great play, the crowd lets you know about it, you know, and even when you make a bad play, the crowd still lets you know about it. And hopefully you won't make that same mistake. I think Vegas can go all the way in this series. If the rule of the sweep has anything to do with anything, we could just see Vegas walk right through and bully Montreal.
I just think that Max Pacioretty, Marc-Andre Fleury, and Mark Stone and company from Vegas is just going to be way too strong for Montreal to handle. I'd love to see Vegas get the sweep. I want my buddy Mark Stone to move on to the cup final. I've wanted him to win a cup since he was a Senator. So I'm really hoping that, that Vegas can get past Montreal. But at the same time, I think Montreal could possibly make this a series. We shall see.
You know, talking about former Senators like Mark Stone, we got to talk about the other former Senator in this, these playoffs. John Gabriel Pageau of the Islanders going in their series with the Lightning. They're tied 1-1. They're playing tonight. What do you think of this series, Eric?
Oh, I mean, Jean Gabriel Pageau, man, that guy is a firecracker. He's always exciting to watch. He always brings a lot of energy. The Islanders had an amazing game in game one. They kind of stumbled a bit in game two in Tampa, but you know what? Talking about home crowds, Game 3 tonight is going to be very exciting because the Islanders will be back at Nassau Coliseum. And if you've watched any of the first two series with the Islanders, those home games, that building is rocking. And I mean, absolutely shaking. It looks like one of the best places to play right now in the playoffs.
And they're really going to be looking for some revenge. I don't know if you saw the game on Tuesday with the Tampa Bay where they tied up this series. Tampa Bay scored a goal with seven players on the ice, and it still went through. Barry Trotz was yelling so loud, I feel like I could hear him from my living room. Are Tampa Bay just spending money on players and paying the refs off too? I can't believe they got away with that.
But I saw the highlight and I was just flabbergasted that you have two referees and two linesmen that completely missed seven players, not six, not five, but seven, like two more guys than they should have had on the ice while they score that goal. It's something that I know a lot of people will be like, well, you know, they should use replay for stuff like that. But I think a lot of the times people miss the line changes, the confusion at the bench sometimes, and they call a too many men and it's just a fluke situation. But in this case, there were seven guys on the ice and they scored a goal. Like, that should be automatically reviewed. I don't care if they review a close play near the bench where, oh, that guy might have been on and that guy might not have been off yet, like stuff like that. Don't review the little small ones. But if it affects a goal like this, that's absolutely disgraceful. The NHL needs to figure out something because that should not have been allowed. And I agree. I think the Islanders are going to be hungry. The Islanders fans are going to be vicious. They are going to be chanting at the Tampa Bay Lightning, at the bench, at every little chance. They will probably start yelling and screaming about too many men, even if it isn't too many men, just to drill that into the referees' heads. So I think this is going to be a really exciting game. And I expect this series to go seven games. I think it's a really close series. Whereas the other one, like I said, I could see it being four, maybe five games.
So much pressure on Sorokin now for the Islanders, now that Varlamov did get injured, taken off the ice in game two. So it'll be interesting to see what Sorokin can do going forward, you know?
I think they have a really good chance of getting through no matter which goalie they have in net. They both played really, really well this year. So I think it's going to be a really fun finish to this series.
Man, I love watching playoff hockey every night. And I'm also excited for next season too, you know? And recently, a coach got a bit of a promotion. Gerard Gallant, he went from coaching Canada's IIHF national hockey team to now he's going to be the head coach for the New York Rangers. I hate this. I really wanted Gallant to come to the Sabres. He brought the Golden Knights, a brand new team, right to the playoffs a few years back. And with all these rumors that Jack Eichel is going to be moving on from the Sabres, I just have a gut feeling he's going to the Rangers. They've had interest in him before. I know they have interest in him now. It could be a cup contender. It's just a question of what kind of deal are the Sabres going to be offered. And the Rangers have prospects and talent to offer Kevin Adams. What do you think, Eric?
I mean, the Gallant signing to New York was a bit of an interesting one. It kind of caught me off guard because I had heard a lot of talk about him trying to do the exact same thing he did with Vegas, with Seattle possibly being the first head coach of the second expansion team in the last few years and maybe taking them to a Stanley Cup final in the first season. But who wouldn't want to coach the New York Rangers in a building like Madison Square Garden? I mean, it's an absolutely incredible atmosphere, incredible fans, very loyal. But also a very big hot seat. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how he handles the pressure. If they do underachieve, he will be ridiculed and talked about a lot, but I think that Gallant will be a good fit in New York.
And it hurt me even more to find out that Gallant, Buffalo wasn't even on his radar for teams he wanted to talk to. So anyway, I'm happy for him, you know, moving on. And we're going to be cutting this segment right now. On the next segment, we're going to be talking the CFL schedule with last week's UFC recap. So don't go away. This is the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Hello, hello again. This is the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. This segment is all about football and UFC. Hard-hitting stuff and hard-hitting news from the Press Box here. Eric, I'm really excited to see the CFL come back. We missed like a whole season last year, so they released the season schedule. What do you have to say about it?
I have a bit of a bone to pick with the CFL.
Oh, because... So do I.
Oh, man, I just don't understand. Like, looking at the Ottawa Red Black schedule, for instance, they start the season out west in Edmonton against the newly named Edmonton Elks. Then they have a bye week in the second week of the season.
Yeah, right off the bat.
Yeah, so, like, each team will have three bye weeks throughout the year, which is whatever. That is what it is. But they start the season in Edmonton, bye week, week two. And then they go to Mosaic Field in Saskatchewan for week three before their home opener against the BC Lions Saturday, August 28th at 7 p.m. I'm hoping that I will be able to be there for that game. That will be absolutely electric to have fans in the stands for the first time in two seasons, knowing that we didn't have a season at all last year. What I really don't understand is how they have the schedule set up, because we play Montreal four times this year, Toronto twice, Hamilton twice. But then when you look out west, we play Calgary once, we play Saskatchewan once, BC twice, and Edmonton twice. But we have zero games home or away against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And you would think that even though there hasn't been a 2020 season, that you would want every team to play the quote-unquote defending Grey Cup champions, because FYI, in case you have been asleep for the last year and a half, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers were the defending Grey Cup champions. They won the last Grey Cup that was ever played before the COVID pandemic caused last season to miss. So I really do not understand how you cannot, in a 9-team league, have a 14-game season without at least one game against every team in the league. Like, it just boggles my mind. I understand that there's a compact schedule and they need to do more, like make sure that there's less travel, for instance, let's say. And that's why they play two games at home to Montreal and two games in Montreal, because it's only a short travel period. Hamilton's not that far. Toronto's not that far. But you're having Calgary come all the way here. You're going to Edmonton and having Edmonton come here. You're going all the way out to BC, but also having BC come here. and you're going out to Saskatchewan, but you're never touching the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. As a Red Blacks and a Bombers fan growing up in Winnipeg, I love the fact that I can go to a game every year and watch the Bombers play here in Ottawa. It's just incredible, but I don't understand what they're doing. What is your take on this, Zach?
Yeah, I don't like that they're forcing this Montreal and Ottawa rivalry, we having to play them four times. I don't like that we don't get to play the defending champs, the Blue Bombers. It just seems like a missed opportunity. Like, there could be a lot of eyes on that game for Ottawa. You know, we're facing the former champs.
And the one thing that I really don't understand, not only are we missing out on playing the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who are the defending Grey Cup champions, but the projected starting quarterback for this team this coming season for the Red Blacks is Matt Nichols, who is a former Winnipeg Blue Bomber. And our new head coach, Paul Appelese, that was supposed to start last year, was the offensive coordinator for the Blue Bombers when they won the Grey Cup in 2019. I just don't get it. There's so many things that would be like, this would be a perfect matchup for the season opener or the home opener for that matter. They dropped the ball.
I smell a conspiracy here, man. I think maybe the higher ups knew we would beat Winnipeg and they were like, ah, oh, no, we can't have that. We can't have that. But one thing I'll say I do like about this schedule is that the season opener and the home opener are on Saturday nights, prime time, you know, 10 o'clock and 7 p.m. I love big opening games like that. I'm going to be trying to force my roommates to watch these games because I like the CFL football style, you know, the shorter field. I think makes for more tighter games near the end. I think it's still entertaining to watch in the meantime before the NFL. And for this season, I hope we can beat Edmonton right off the rip and catch Saskatchewan off guard in our second game because they're a pretty good team. It'd be great to get a win over them right off the bat. And I know I'd sleep a lot easier if the Red Blacks didn't have to fight tooth and nail to claw their way to a playoff spot. You know, a couple early wins can be really good for this team. What do you think?
So, play week one, off week two, play week three, four, five, six, off week seven, play weeks 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, off week 15, and then play week 16. Those couple games coming off of those three bye weeks are going to be very crucial because history has shown since 2014 when the Red Blacks came in, they have never played very well coming off of a bye week. So hopefully with the new head coach and a new system and a new quarterback, that will change.
Yeah, you can't rest too easy, you know, on a bye week. You got to still stay in that mindset. And thinking about other hard-hitting sports and stuff like that, the UFC just had UFC 263 this past Saturday, and it was one of the best pay-per-views I think I've seen in a long time. Three big fights I had my eyes on this one. Adesanya versus Marvin Vettori in the main event. Adesanya won this one. He responded to his first loss in his MMA career, putting on an absolute clinic against this guy. He made it look easy. Marvin looked like he really bulked up for this one, but it didn't really matter because Adesanya was just far and ahead, the smarter and faster fighter here. His feint game was god tier. Like, it was amazing. Like, he totally, like, his progression as a fighter has been amazing to watch. And another championship fight that was there, Brandon Moreno, he's the first Mexican-born UFC champion after he submitted Davison Figueiredo for the flyweight belt and then rear naked choke in the third round. Oh my gosh, this guy, Brandon Moreno, I didn't really know much about him, but he was exciting to watch in this one. I'm really looking forward to seeing where he takes this division going forward. But for me, Eric, the best fight of the night was between Nate Diaz and Leon Edwards. This fight was so great because it's exactly what you would have expected to see from both of these guys, okay? Nate Diaz was taking a beating, but he never, ever looked hurt. He was flaunting and taunting all through the fight, and Leon Edwards was like an assassin in there, hitting him with precision strikes to the head and body. But there were some moments where it looked like Edwards was going to stumble and get knocked out. Went the distance in the end, and Leon Edwards came away with a unanimous decision victory. I think this might be Nate Diaz's last fight. He never really looked tired in this one, but he just seemed outclassed. And I don't know if anybody else in that weight class can really be, I don't know, good competition for him in the sense that he can beat. I'm really excited to see where Leon Edwards goes after this fight. This pay-per-view was amazing. I was very impressed by it.
Yeah, it sounded like it was quite the fight card. So, I mean, I've never really been much of a Nate Diaz fan, but watching him take over that fight and dominate that entire card, so to speak, like you said, like stole the show. That's definitely something that people should be watching for, is to see what he is going to be doing and where he's going to fight next, who he's going to fight next.
And that about does it for our segment this time. Unfortunately, we don't have any boxing news to talk about, but in our next segment, we're going to be going over the awesome, awesome victory Canada had in soccer. But we don't want to give too much away. We got to keep you sticking around, you know, so don't go away. We're going to be back with the Press Box with some soccer news and our Press Box playmakers. I'm Zach Natto for Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
Welcome back to the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9.
And we are back on the Press Box on CKDJ 107.9. I'm Eric Fox, and with me is Zach Natto. Zach, I'm not sure if you got a chance to watch any of the two games between Canada and Haiti in the World Cup qualifying for Qatar 2022, but oh my goodness, Canada stepped up huge yet again. It was a moment 24 years in the making for the Canadian men's team. So they slogged their way through two preliminary rounds. Canada advanced to the final stage of CONCACAF qualifying for the 2022 FIFA World Cup with a 3-0 win over Haiti on Tuesday night in Bridgeview, Illinois. And I gotta say, the game was absolutely incredible. A really, really bad own goal, like a just horrible own goal by the keeper for Haiti that got the team started on a roll, but they just never looked back after that. Because over the first two rounds of this tournament, they won all six games. And they were against lower-ranked opponents, but they combined for a score of 31-1. Canada has never seen their soccer team play this well in any tournament, let alone in a World Cup qualifying tournament. I gotta say that I am really excited because they get to face the top nations in the region in the final round of the CONCACAF qualifiers, which is something that they haven't really done since the build-up to the 1998 FIFA World Cup in France, which they unfortunately did not qualify for, obviously. It's an incredible opportunity for Canada. I think that they're going to do very well. So with this, Canada moves on to the Octagon, which has eight teams. It's going to be very incredible to watch to see how well they can do against so many of these high power teams. They start off the tournament September at home versus Honduras. Hopefully it will be at home in front of like Canadian fans, just a jam packed stadium. And then they go to the US. Then they play either St. Kitts and Nevis or El Salvador in the final game in September before moving on to October. They have Mexico and Jamaica on the road before they come home to play Panama. And then in November, Canada versus Costa Rica and Canada versus Mexico at home. In January of next year, Honduras versus Canada in Honduras, Canada versus USA in Canada. And then the same St. Kitts and Nevis or El Salvador versus Canada in one of those countries. And then closing off the tournament, March 2022, Costa Rica versus Canada in Costa Rica, Canada home to Jamaica, and then they finish off at Panama. I think it's going to be really exciting because Canada is currently 70th in the FIFA world rankings. And of the other seven teams, they're about to face six that are ranked higher than them. Mexico is number 11, the US is 20, Jamaica 45, Costa Rica 50, Honduras 67, El Salvador 69, but only Panama at 78 is ranked lower than Canada. So this will be a true test. And if they can get through, they will be on to the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. So I'm thinking that this is going to be very exciting, and anyone who is a soccer fan in Canada needs to watch this. But now that I've gotten that out of my system, it's the moment that everybody's waited for. The Press Box Playmakers. Zach, it's your time to shine. Fill us in on how we did last week, how we're doing on the year, and what you're looking at this week.
Well, Eric, after risking our positive record last week when we were 22-22 on our 13th episode, seemed like my luck ran out. But almost all of our bets ended up coming through, with only the Nets falling short on the money line last week. We're back on top, and we have a pretty decent enough record right now of 25-23 after 13 episodes. We went 3-1 last week. Now, we're on to this week's picks. My money line pick this week is for Friday night's game with the Vegas Golden Knights and Montreal Canadiens. If the law of the sweep trend follows here, from Winnipeg sweeping Edmonton to the Habs sweeping the Jets, it's totally believable that Vegas could very well sweep Montreal in this series. Now, I hope that doesn't mean Vegas will get swept if they move on, because that would make for some pretty boring hockey, but I'm thinking too far ahead. My money line pick for this week is for the Vegas Golden Knights to beat the Habs. My over-under pick is for the Bucks and Nets game tonight. I'm going under 213. I picked the Nets to win last week, and it caused them to lose. So rather than betting on a super team like the Nets or the not-to-be-underestimated Bucks, I'm going to sit with the under in this one. All the games in this series have been pretty low scoring, with the exception of the last game on Tuesday. I'm hoping for a tight defensive game or another Nets blowout. My over-under pick for this week is under 213 between the Bucks and the Nets. Now for the handicap and spread pick, I'm going for Friday night's game against the Utah Jazz and the LA Clippers. My money's on the Jazz covering a decent enough spread of about 3 or 4 against the Clippers. Kawhi was able to push this series back into a tie before Wednesday's game, but now that Kawhi's injured, I have a feeling the Jazz are going to win Friday night's game as well and close out this series. My handicap spread pick this week is for the Utah Jazz covering the spread against LA Clippers. And for the bonus pick of the week, it's another Friday game, but it's in the afternoon. And in honor of Canada making it to the final round of the World Cup qualifiers, I thought, hey, why not try my luck on betting on some soccer in the UEFA Euro 2020 groupings? Now, this game's at 3 o'clock today, and it's between England and Scotland. The experts seem to think the odds are stacked in England's favor right now. And who am I to judge the soccer experts? My bonus pick for this week is England beating Scotland in the UEFA Soccer League today at 3 p.m. Eric, what do you think of this week's picks?
I think that these picks are going to cash in. I have a feeling that we may be able to go 4-0. It will be interesting to see that England versus Scotland match in the Euro Cup, but Vegas, I'm really hoping that Vegas can pull it off. Like you said, without Kawhi, I think the Clippers are done for. And it's going to be really exciting to see if we can have another maybe 3-1 or 4-0 week this week, man.
Honestly, I think after week 13, our luck is going to go up.
I really hope so, because that was a clutch win last week to go 3-1 after the 1-3 week that caused us to drop down to 500. So let's see what we can do. And that does it for this episode. Episode number 14 already of the Press Box here on CKDJ 107.9. For Zach Natto, we're missing Lita McLeod and Kellen Turner this week. I'm Eric Fox. Thank you for tuning in. We will be back next Thursday at the same time, noon, on CKDJ 107.9.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Have a great weekend.